What time is it? What time is it?
8:12.
You all are so well conditioned to not have phones and clocks out. It's awesome, right? It's 8:12, give or take, 8:13, that's fine. That time at night is gonna mean different things to different people. Nighttime, right? To a toddler, 8:12 may be up a little late, right? Of course, they get up at 5 or 6, right? To a tween, maybe 8:15, 8:30 might be around bedtime. To some teens, this is nighttime. To my college student, this is just getting started. It's early in the evening. And to those of us of a certain age, it may be getting towards bedtime or being up too late on the other end. Our ancestor Jacob seems to have had a thing for evenings. Unusual things seem to happen to Jacob at night. Last week, we read the story. Jacob was running from his brother Esau. He had had that altercation. His brother wanted to kill him, pretty much. Jacob is running away back to the land his mother family came from. He stops for the night, puts his head down on a rock, and what happens? He has this dream. What does he see? What? A ladder, a sulam, from here up to there. Some translations have it as a stairway. How many of you slow danced to Stairway to Heaven once upon a time? Right? But he has this vision of this connection between heaven and earth, and there are angels going up and coming down, and at the very top of it is God. And God has a promise for Jacob, a promise of land and progeny and safety as he travels outside the land and that he will come back. A vision of what's going to happen next for Jacob. Now, this week, as Rose is going to tell us tomorrow morning when she's our teacher of Torah, this week, Jacob has another night encounter. It's about 20 years later he's been gone. He is coming back to the land. He's going to see his brother Esau. He has lots of cattle and donkeys and sheep and servants and wives and kids. And he's pretty nervous about how Esau's going to receive him. He divides everything into two groups, so in case Esau attacks one, that the other one can get away. He sends everybody across the river into the land. He stays behind, and he finds himself under attack. This guy, who shows up without warning, not announced anywhere else, but all of a sudden, he's in a wrestling match. And Jacob gets injured, but he fights to a draw. Dawn is coming, night is ending. The guy asks to be released. Jacob says, "I'll let you go, but only if you bless me first." So this guy gives him a new name as a blessing, a new piece of his identity. No longer Jacob the supplanter, but Yisrael, one who wrestles with divine beings. Jacob asks for the guy's name, and the guy says, "Why do you want to know?" and disappears. Now, our sages do wonder exactly who this guy might have been. Was it, in fact, God? Was it an angel? Was it Esau who snuck over in the middle of the night? Was it Esau's guardian angel? Or maybe this is all just in Jacob's head. We'll see what Rose has to say tomorrow morning. So, strange things happen to Jacob at night in the dark. He gets a vision of the promise of tomorrow with the ladder and God and renewal of the covenant, safety and good things that are going to come his way, this vision of what could be. And he gets an important aspect of his identity revealed, wrestling and struggling, but ultimately good results, a new name reflecting what he stands for and unveiling his truer self. Now, I know there are those who worry that we are on the verge of plunging into deep darkness in America and a reign of night. I'm not quite at that point of doom and gloom. But there are troubling signs, gathering clouds, some darkness definitely looming on the horizon. I worry about the rising darkness of anti-Semitism. This past year has seen a 300% increase in the number of anti-Semitic incidences reported, from 3,300 in the year before October 7th, 2023, to over 10,000 in the year after. Now, some of this is conflated with anti-Israel actions in the aftermath of the war, and not all anti-Israel protest is inherently anti-Semitic. But there's an alarming amount that does cross that boundary, especially when it's not just about Israel, but about Jews. For example, it's a situation that still is a little unclear, but you may have seen in the news troubling reports about the raid on student activists at George Mason University this week. In their homes, apparently, were guns and ammunition and signs that said, "Death to Jews." The ADL reports that the number of Americans with anti-Semitic attitudes in this past year went from one in every five American, 20%, to one in every four Americans, almost 25%. Nearly 25% of Americans believe that some anti-Semitic tropes are true, that Jews control the media or finance or government or power, or they have more loyalty to Israel than to the United States. And there's an alarming rise among younger generations, among the millennials and Generation Z. We can hearken back, we know the situation dating back even to Charlottesville in 2017. There's been a direct rise in the acceptability of anti-Semitic attitudes and attacks from the political right and the political left. I worry about that darkness coming to us. In fact, I worry about the rising darkness of all hatred of others, not just anti-Semitism, but anti-Muslim bigotry or white supremacy or racism and more. According to New Yorker magazine, on election night, a guy named Nick Fuentes tweeted, "Your body, my choice, forever." Do you know who Nick Fuentes is? A 26-year-old neo-Nazi kid with a huge following, caused an outcry a year or two ago by having dinner with President-elect Trump. In any case, his misogynist tweet, "Your body, my choice," was picked up by thousands of people, and it was put as a comment on many, many young women's social media accounts, a 4,600% increase in 24 hours. Of mention of that term, along with, by the way, "get back in the kitchen." There's dark rising hatred as well in the form of transphobia, a fear of the transgender community. This was a rallying cry of the political right in the recent election, fears of predatory men in women's bathrooms and denying the existence of gender dysphoria and forbidding medical treatment to those who are in need. We had the election, on the other hand, of the first openly trans representative in Congress, Delaware's Sarah McBride. And in response to that, one of her soon-to-be colleagues, a Republican congresswoman, proposed a ban on trans women using women's bathrooms in the Capitol without even meeting her new colleague. And she then filed the bill to expand that to all federal property across the country. I worry about the growing hatred and darkness when it comes to attitudes towards immigrants, documented or undocumented. The looming threat of mass deportation of 11 to 13 million people. Apparently there are plans, at least in some people's minds, to use the American military to round them up, to spend funding on building new holding facilities, to bully allies and other countries to take them in. Now, there are those who say this won't happen. It's simply too complicated or too costly or will have too big an impact on the economy. But the chilling effect is already happening. People who are entitled to social services, to health care, to school, to police protection are now afraid to access them for fear of getting on anyone's list in case there might be these deportations, whether they're here legally or not. There is darkness looming, and we need to be mindful of this. However, I am heartened by the examples of the stories of Jacob and his actions in the nighttime. In this week's Torah portion, Jacob wrestles and struggles in the nighttime. He suffers the injury, but he survives, and his new name reveals who he truly is and shows the strength that he has. Friends, when we face the darkness of bigotry and hatred, of Jews or of women or of Muslims, of trans folks, of immigrants, of anyone. We have to stand up to it as Jacob did and engage in that struggle. We may not win every encounter. We may have setbacks or injuries along the way, but we wrestle in the darkness. We fight with it, at least to a draw. And that struggle reveals our truest nature. We are not creatures of darkness and hatred at our core. As my friend activist Leonard Fine used to say, we are Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim, which means we are compassionate children of compassionate parents. The nighttime wrestling unveiled Jacob's inner self, Yisrael, his truer self. And friends, if we find ourselves wrestling in a time of darkness, we have to uncover our inner compassion for all of God's children, Jews and Muslims and Christians and others, men and women and the LGBTQ community, the immigrant and the stranger in the midst, for we were strangers in the land of Egypt. We have to stand up to darkness, the darkness that would deny anyone their truest selves. If the darkness swirling around does deepen, we must be ready to wrestle as Jacob did and find the inner strength and the inner self to prevail. And then we will be granted what Jacob received in his first nighttime encounter, a vision of what tomorrow truly can be. For him, that was an eventual return to the land and reconciliation with his brother, claiming the inheritance for his children and all those after them. For us, it is a vision of a world without the darkness of hatred, when we can claim for all of God's creatures the inheritance of this earth for our children and their children after them. Nighttime has within it the scary parts of darkness and hatred, but nighttime can also lead us to strength, to a renewed sense of identity and purpose, and to a vision of the day that comes after the night. May we be ever mindful and vigilant about the darkness of hatred. May we engage in the struggle to support those who fall beneath its gaze. May we find ourselves inspired by the examples of our tradition to wrestle our world out of darkness into the light of the world we want it to be. Kein yihi ratzon, may this be God's will. And together we say, Amen. Amen.